But AI is only as effective as, right, the quality of the human perception and creativity and experience that engages it, you know? So that's one of the things I teach is thinking starts where information ends. Great. You've gathered all the information, got lots of stuff. Now tell me, you know, where, based on your experience, why, based on this experience, this information matters. What's most relevant in it? What do we learn from it? What does it suggest about what to do next?
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome to another episode of the Your Living Brand.live show. It's Ben Baker, and welcome back, my wonderful audience. Love the fact that you guys come back week after week, that you share, that you comment on LinkedIn, that you email me at ben@yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you for all what you guys do. You are an amazing audience, and I couldn't do what I'm doing without you. This week, I've got somebody a little different on the show because we're going to talk about not only the travel agency, but we're going to talk about how do we change perception of who we are and what we do. Now, David Gierstorf comes from, I'm guessing, 40 plus years in the travel industry. I'm going to let him tell his story because it's an incredible thing. He is the author of a book called Hardships, Navigating Your Company, Career, and Life Through the Fog of Disruption. David, welcome to the show.
Oh, Ben, thank you. Really been looking forward to our chat. I hope we find some interesting and relevant topics for your audience. God bless them for seeking perspective and insight and you for giving it to them. So it's a great pleasure to be here.
Well, you and I have had so many conversations off air on a variety of different things. I sat there and said, you know what? I got to get David on the show because you come from an industry that is probably one of the least understood out there. The travel industry, people really have very little understanding about what goes on in the back. You know, people sit there, they understand, they get to the resort, they sit on the beach, they get their pina colada, you know, and then they go home. But they don't understand what happens to make the magic happen. And you've had a front row seat for pretty much your entire career to be able to enable that amazing customer experience, that you'll get that people not only having those experiences, but telling those experiences to others. So why don't you give us a little bit of in-depth understanding of who you are, where you came from, and what brought you here today?
Oh, happy to. And I would say that experience is the term that ties it all together for me, as well as for the many millions of guests I've helped serve as they pursue their own dreams of travel experience. I was born into the travel business to a degree. I was born in the frontier of Alaska, in Fairbanks, Alaska, before statehood. My father was very young and single parent entrepreneur, amazingly creative man. And he had his early career with Alaska Airlines, helping to build that scrappy little regional carrier into a major force in the airline industry. And look where it's gone today. Just amazing. I had a front row seat to that, to a single parent father. How did he take care of me? I came to the meetings. I sat quietly with a little bow tie and a sport jacket on through dinners, through meetings. I played behind airline ticket counters, watched by the staff at the counters. I played in the hangars while these big planes were prepared and worked on. It was quite a, you know, interesting inside look at one aspect of the travel industry, aviation. Well, after Alaska Airlines, and when I was about 13, my father formed what became our family business. He left the airline and began a tourism enterprise in Alaska. And his vision and his creativity was to make the real Alaska accessible to visitors. That meant that we undertook the great task of opening up the Arctic to tourism, working with small communities and native corporations to put in place hotels and organized activities. We chartered 737 airplanes daily, two a day, so that we could run a cycle of two-day, one-night tours from Anchorage and Fairbanks up to the Arctic so people could experience the real Alaska, cross the Arctic Circle, see the midnight sun, learn about authentic native subsistence culture. spectacular. And that idea grew and grew to many parts of Alaska, that we developed the Pribilof Islands, the Galapagos of the North, far out on the Aleutian chain. We owned and operated the National Park Concession at Glacier Bay, one of the most famous tourism destinations today in Alaska, for many, many years, the lodge and the tour boats to the glaciers and the like. Man, so many experiences just in Alaska. And then we broke out of Alaska with a small ship cruise line called Exploration Cruises. Small ships that carried no more than 100 people that were designed to go where big ships couldn't, to take you straight into, just as we were doing with the Arctic and our other destinations, that concept, that idea, straight into real, authentic experiences. Our fleet of vessels ultimately operated not just Alaska, but on the Columbian Snake Rivers, in the Sea of Cortez, Costa Rica and Panama, Tahiti and French Polynesia, and even in Europe and the Deep Caribbean. So we built a capital intensive, operational intensive, experience intensive business. And this was just in the first 30 years of my life. We sold that business to a very large corporation, and that jettisoned me then into my next level of career in the global business. And that was when I joined Carnival Corporation and became the first general manager of Windstar Cruises, a boutique luxury experience brand, which was owned and operated under Carnival by Holland America Line, which is a Carnival company as well. Here's where I learned big business, publicly traded, disciplines different from the entrepreneurial discipline. You know, entrepreneur, if it's Thursday, it must be payroll. How are we going to pay that? Where's the money going to come from? You know,
or from Peter, pay Paul. Okay, we'll worry about it on next Thursday. Okay,
exactly. I mean, it's the reality of bootstrapping. You know, a lot of people don't have the continence for it. My father did many times over. He was an amazing entrepreneur. And while I learned some of those things from him, I learned a lot of things from the MBA corporate world as well. And that's served me well through my career. So I had a wonderful career with Carnival Corp, where it rose to the number two position in Holland America Line. There's $1 billion-plus operating company with 14,000 employees, ships all over the world. I was primarily responsible for the product development and design, the ship deployments, the planning, the marketing, sales and distribution, you know, the brand positioning, the company. We went through some really amazing times with that company and in the industry. Then after Holland America, I returned to my passion, small ship cruising. Served a stint as the CEO of Paul Gauguin Cruises, luxury line in the Pacific, of American West Steamboat Company and Delta Queen Steamboat Company under holding company called Majestic America Line. Then through my own company, Global Voyages Group, I've consulted with, advised, and helped go to market at least 20 global experiential cruise and travel brands. And that's what I have the most fun doing right now, is advisory work and go to market strategies and activities for specialty cruise and travel companies. In essence, connecting the customer who's seeking the most extraordinary experiences with the companies that provide the most extraordinary experiences. They're not hard to find, needle in the haystack. It's hard for those companies to find that type of customer. And it's hard for those customers to sort the marketplace and find those smaller companies who have such a small voice in the marketplace. So I have a lot of fun helping on both sides of that, be a great facilitator of knowledge between consumers and cruise operators. And as you mentioned, I think a lot about this industry. I have a lot of experience under my belt. I wrote a book, Hard Ships, and thinking about 40 years of being on the front line of building a global industry such as cruise, and a truly global, multicultural, multi-country, international in every way, and being subject to every disruption possible along that growth path, geopolitical, financial, health, you name it, operational. It's all there. We've had to deal with it as an industry. Sometimes I've had to deal with it in my own role as a leader. So the lessons from that, I stepped back and thought about, because I journal. I've always journaled in my life. Maybe we'll talk about that when we talk about relevance, you know, but I've journaled, and I was able to look back on the journals to those periods of great disruption in the marketplace and in my company. And that's why the book is in your company, in your career, and in your life. Because first thing I observed was it's rarely in just one. It affects all. And the second thing I observed was I landed on a repetitive set of protocols for dealing with a disruption, acknowledging it, adapting to it, and moving through it and out of it successfully. And that's also the story of the cruise industry, right? I mean, it's an industry that keeps growing, even with this big disruption. 22 new ships in 2012, $12 billion investment. I mean, the machine keeps going. So that's a little bit of color regarding my background.
So let's go back to the very beginning, because I find it fascinating being the son of a single dad who sat there and said, okay, I've got a job to do. I'm growing this empire, which ended up being Alaska Airlines, before you into the cruise thing, and bringing you along. The fact that I could see you in your jacket and your bow tie, sitting in on meetings and being behind the counters and being involved in the actual daily operations. So what are the things that you learned early on in those days that probably gave you the best insights to be able to be successful in a career and enable other people to be successful in their careers moving forward?
I would say that was a scrappy startup frontier environment. So the very first thing I learned was the power of creativity, the ability to think creatively, to be determined, to find a way forward, through, around, over, under, didn't matter. There was a commitment, to build, to succeed, to grow, and to accomplish things. And that takes a deep level of passion. So I'd say that's the other lesson, was you have to be passionate about what you're doing if you're going to do it at scale and with high impact. I would say another key area was in the area of leadership. Leadership is about communication. It's about vision. It's about action. Lead by example. And alignment and results. And I saw the good and the bad of that as I was growing up. Saw examples, I was blessed with being able to see a range of examples of good and bad.
Well, if anybody who thinks that leadership is all roses and everything goes smoothly, hasn't ever led.
It's so true. So yeah, those were some early lessons, just the passion, determination, creativity for problem solving, creating resource where it doesn't exist, alchemy in a sense, and that has served me well. It's made me unique in the larger business world, in that I have that in my DNA. I have that in my toolkit when I sit in a meeting, when I lead a team, when I explain. And I'll tell you a really key lesson that my father shared with me. And he said, son, when your objectives aren't being met, when you're frustrated with others, when it doesn't seem like, everyone's on the same page, take responsibility for it. Take responsibility for it. First place to look is, am I communicating effectively, clearly, consistently? That always stuck in my head to hear my dad, with as high as I revered him, with all his accomplishments, to say, when I fail at something, when I fail to convince, to prevail, the first place I look is at me.
That's a brilliant thing, because so many leaders are going, well, why don't they understand? Why aren't they doing what I want them to do? Why aren't they following the mission, vision, the values, and things that I'm laying out? And the question is, are we communicating effectively? Are we telling the right story? Are we telling it in their words, not ours? Are we making it relevant to them, not us? Are we painting a picture in their minds of why they are individually important to the success, and what you need from them in order for the overall project to succeed?
And why it matters to them that it succeed.
Exactly. And I think that that's a challenge of leadership. And that's, that's the business that I'm in. That's the business that I love, is being able to help that communication. But that's a real insightful thing for your father to teach you at a very young age, to sit there and say, look, we need to take responsibility. We need to sit there and say, look, if something isn't going right, first of all, let's look within. Let's sit there and say, okay, what have I done wrong? Or what have I not communicated effectively? What can I do differently in order to make this work properly? If the answer is nothing, then you can go look elsewhere. But having that introspective look to begin with is a powerful thing that probably enabled you to be a much better leader, both on a small scale and a large scale, to be able to sit there and say, look, I'm going to take ownership. I want the big chair. I want to grow this. And so my thing is, how has that enabled you to not only succeed yourself, but also to teach that next generation of leaders to step up into their own chairs and be able to be successful in their own right?
You know, what we're talking about, I describe as a stepping back for a moment and re-engaging. We always have that opportunity, always, to step back, reflect, re-engage, try a different approach, tweak the formula, tweak the message, you know, step back, evaluate, re-engage. We can do that repetitively on any issue. So that's one thing that I share with others. The other thing I share and try to mentor is a simple concept to me. Thinking starts where information ends. We've become so data, so buried in data. It's so readily accessible. We've become lazy as thinkers. Why should I calculate it? I can just verbally ask, you know.
Hey, Google.
Yeah. Oh, be careful. We'll have somebody join our meeting. So, but you know what I'm saying is, and so I've seen so many times with younger professionals who are engaged with technology now and in decision-making, I've seen them reach a logical, but completely wrong conclusion and fail to think about what they actually know about the business. Why do you accept this number? It's not reasonable given our experience to date, is it, or your experience? What makes you think this could possibly be the right answer, the right calculation, the right, you know, you've got to kind of allow yourself some confidence in your experience, in your gut. That's going to become more critical for our species as AI becomes a powerful tool that hopefully we harness rather than become harnessed by. But AI is only as effective as, right, the quality of the human perception and creativity and experience that engages it, you know? So that's one of the things I teach is thinking starts where information ends. Great, you've gathered all the information, got lots of stuff. Now tell me, you know, where, based on your experience, why, based on this experience, this information matters. What's most relevant in it? What do we learn from it? What does it suggest about what to do next?
Well, it's garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
I was just on another podcast earlier today, and we were all talking about, you know, dashboarding. Everything's being dashboarded. Everything's been whitewashed. Everything's been sanitized and brought up the ladder because nobody wants to look stupid when they're bringing up the information. So either they omit information, they ignore information, or they, you know, sanitize the information as they're leveling it up to be able to make their department or whatever look, or themselves look better in the case. So by the time the information gets up to a decision-making level where people could actually look there and make decision-making, do they have the right information at their fingertips to make a logical decision? And are they able to, you know, to trust the information in front of them that's going to enable them to be able to be successful and the organization to be successful?
I was fortunate when I came up through the business in that we used Excel to gather and report data. So we had to add a layer of understanding to all those hundreds of pages of data.